Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Reality TV shows, especially ones about love, are growing in popularity. Ohio just had its reality TV moment. The newest season of Love is Blind, featuring contestants from Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. The show wrapped up recently, and one of the finalists was a professor from Ohio State University. Professor Victor St. John from the John Glenn College of Public Affairs. He left the show as one of the only married couples, and he joins us today. Welcome to All Sides, Vic.
Hi, hello, hello. I'm super happy to be on All Sides today.
Thanks for coming in. So, first of all, how does it feel that Columbus was featured in this very popular reality show? I mean, whenever you watched it back, were you like, oh, wow, that's my Columbus? What did you think?
I thought it was pretty cool, like, just to show what Columbus is about, at least the pride, what we have to offer, the different areas that exist. We kind of have a lot of different cultural elements that people don't know about, and I call it a hidden gem. Mm-hmm. So I think Columbus is really representative of just the country as a whole. So for it to be based there or here specifically was pretty amazing.
So how did it feel to be filming parts of the show, you know, downtown and the short north? I mean, did people like recognize you, or not at the time, I guess maybe not in the filming time, but like, were people like attracted, like, what's going on? What's happening over there?
Yeah, so those moments did happen more so because there are certain staple items known about the show, whether it's like the Golden Cup, right?
And so
people see that filming, or if they see film crews, then it's kind of eyes on like what's happening here.
Yeah.
But folks were pretty respectful, just kind of doing their thing. So it felt kind of normal, but weird at the same time.
Normal and weird. Yeah. I think that's reality TV in a nutshell, normal and weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
So of all the ways to find love in the world, you know, why did you choose Love is Blind?
Man, that's a really good one. I think it's interesting because I am kind of risk averse and I'm very much more introverted. But I think just the way my day-to-day was set up, being a professor, there's a lot that's unseen that goes into just kind of the labor behind the scenes with teaching and prepping and research and mentoring and service and the whole nine. That I was kind of a workaholic where the traditional ways of meeting people don't work. And then also in the workplace, I keep kind of thick firewalls up. So it's not like I'm going to like look for a potential partner at work either. So It left very few options available, and a friend told me, hey, the show's coming to town, just take a look. Like, I know what your love life looks like. I looked at the questionnaire. I said, nah. But then I went back to it. I read the questions, and they were pretty thought-provoking, and it kind of hit that academic introspective side of myself, just answering the questions, and before you knew it, I hit submit.
Was it kind of an accident? You were like, oh, suddenly I want to do this?
Oh, yeah. No, not an accident.
Okay. Okay. So did you try, you know, like the dating apps or going to the bar, like that kind of thing? And then you thought, oh, reality TV, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's a good question. So I've tried the dating apps, but I don't think that's the best fit for me, because dating apps are a little bit more superficial, where you have to see the person and like you're just swiping through all these different options or vice versa, what they're doing to you. And I think people could look at me on the exterior and just have whatever perception they think I am or who I should be when they meet me in public. And I could probably go left. And then also just I think their personality, like when you meet me off the rip, I don't think I'm a very like energetic, super like in your face person. I'm pretty just calm. I would describe myself sometimes just normal, boring, easygoing, and I don't think that's a hit for kind of texting through dating apps and things like that. So that was a no-go. Plus the bar scene, I'm not really into bars like that. So again, that just limits your opportunities.
Did you actually truly expect to fall in love on the show, though? Or did you think you were just going to have some fun, maybe?
So I didn't think fun was going to happen. I was like nervous in that sense. So I didn't think like, well, this is about to be a fun time. I think I went in there like, hey, I'm going to put my heart on the table and I think something good is going to come out of this. Partly because when I got the call and before I made the actual decision to say yes, right? Not just apply, but say yes when they say, hey, we want you to come. I prayed over the decision and I got very clear kind of assignment saying, yeah, go into it. You're protected and what's going to come from it is going to be net benefit somehow. So
you're So it's not a spoiler alert because everyone knows you found a wife on the show. Your wife, Christine, she is from Cleveland, right? So would you would have never crossed paths had it not been for this show.
Yeah, we would have never crossed paths because she also has family out in Cincinnati, Cleveland, all of that. But she was never in Columbus. We would have never overlapped in that way. So it was very much nothing short of a blessing that we met each other in the pods that the way we did, the way we connected when we first met and had those conversations. Mm-hmm. Like it was a level of same level of calmness, reservedness, maturity, humor, depth, lightness. It was a refreshing conversation and a connection that I can't really describe.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the ups and downs of reality TV this hour. And right now we're talking with Ohio State University professor and Love is Blind contestant Victor St. John. So the show aired practically a whole year after it was filmed. Mm-hmm. Did you have to hide the fact that you were married so you didn't ruin the ending of the show?
Yeah. So mm-hmm. we had to kind of keep it on the low for the mm-hmm. most part. So close friends knew and some colleagues knew, like I would wear my ring and things like that.
You were allowed to wear a ring? That's what I was wondering, yeah.
So it's kind of a so-so, right? So you're not mm-hmm. going to take photos and have your ring out or you all together and things like that. So mm-hmm. only people in our close circle and close colleagues really knew that I was a married man and she was a married woman, but no one else knew what was going on. You kind of had to keep it on the low.
Yeah. So as the show became a reality and you were in all the promos and they were, and they kind of realized like, oh, you are on this show.
Yep.
Then I'm sure people were like looking at your hand being like, what is he wearing a ring? Like,
oh, no yeah. rings at that point. Yeah. Christine was using like one door. I was using another door. We were driving separately to places. Mm. We couldn't go out on dates together out in the public.
When the show was airing one week at a time, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you could start talking about stuff after a particular episode aired. Is that right?
Exactly.
So being a professor, though, I mean, you're in front of, I'm guessing, a room full of like 19 and 20 year olds
yeah.
on the regular, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did they react as the promo came out to show that you were going to be on the show? I mean, what is it like being on reality TV and coming face to face with a room full of 20 year olds all the time?
That's funny. It's funny because I got the gamut, too. I have like 18 year olds all the way to graduate students, too.
Right.
So
okay.
Some of them even
so
my
some of
age.
Them are grown ups. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But interestingly enough, folks were pretty chill, excited at the front. They're like, mm-hmm. whoa, that's my professor. I think I had one student who raised his hand and he said, hey, I saw you on my For You page. Are we going to talk about that? This is in the middle of class.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, this is class time, so I'll only take 30 seconds to address this. And I was like, yes, such and such. And then we went back to talking about policy. But folks kind of mellowed out over the semester because I think they're like, yeah, this is, we know him. Like, it's just, you know, Vic. So.
Okay. All right. Well, you found love and made a commitment pretty early on in the show. But for others with this 10 years of the show, it's really difficult. Mm-hmm. What do you think was different about the way you and Christine Hamilton, your wife, approached the show as opposed to the other contestants?
Yeah, I think the way it's set up, right? It's a social experiment where you don't know what the person looks mm-hmm. like as you're getting to know them and you mm-hmm. make a decision whether or not you want to be engaged, and then you meet their family, their friends, you make a decision to get married or not. And I think for me and Christine, we really came in with the understanding that it did not matter what that person looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this season, as it plays out and unfolds and as I was watching it, I think that was one factor of many factors that different people may not have made it to the end or decided mm-hmm. to kind of part ways. It's like, hey, you're not the typical physical type and all these other things. And that's something I think Christine wanted to get away from and I wanted to get away from too, which the social experiment allowed for. So
in past reality TV shows, there's instances where fans will try to dig up dirt on participants. You know, once the cast list is revealed, they start like going through their social media.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to do any sort of background check or did you go through your like 10-year history on Instagram just to see what was on there? Yeah.
Oh, no. So okay. I didn't have to do any personal background check
yeah.
or anything like that.
What about the show? Did they do a background check on you?
Yeah, they screen us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Were you worried at all that someone was going to like try to dig something up on you?
Not too much. I mean, I'm an imperfect person, so I'm mm-hmm. sure like there are people who probably don't like me or have, I don't know. I don't know. But nothing that I wouldn't be. Like,
well, if it was going to yeah. come out, it would have come out by now, I guess. Right?
That too.
Yeah,
that
true.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, ever since the show aired, you've gained a lot more followers. You've been more active on social media. Mm-hmm. Were you intending to leave the show with a new platform? Like, were you hoping to be famous and in love?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. It's funny. I was hoping to find love and that be it. And then just I didn't expect one, the magnitude of following to be what it is today, or what that means, what comes with it, with what you post or what you say. And I don't think the growth of that digital community is by accident. So I found myself now in a place of like, what do I do here? How do I steward this community in some sort of a good way where folks can get to know me better, know myself and my wife better, and try to shed some goodness in this world in some sort of way. So I think that's the space we're in now in terms of kind of the social media following, figuring that out. I think we have some plans for our anniversary where we'll do something big for the digital community as well. But it's like a separate, separate life.
Well, but you cross them over a little bit. I saw a post you did on Instagram where, you know, because you have hundreds of thousands of followers now, and you were trying to explain cost benefit analysis to them because you had just taught that, right? So, or you were like, let's take a moment to educate the public.
I mean, it's part of my day to day, and I guess that firewall is coming down, right? In terms of profession and personal life, I'm like, let's give you a little insight of what happens in the classroom, and maybe folks might sign up coming to the classroom. It's it's a cool experience.
You're like, they're like, let's talk public policy, let's get a degree here. So across social media, you on the show were regarded as one of the least dramatic, most respectful men in the group. You were considered a green flag contestant. Did you notice that while you were interacting with others on the show, that maybe your motives, your values were a little different than some of your fellow contestants?
That's a real good one. I think I noticed in my interaction with like other folks, I think we have shared values. I think everyone does want kind of the family and health and all those different things. I think maybe it's just more so how we show up when we interact with each other is that we may differ on our understandings in some way. So yeah, I don't really know how to explain other folks' kind of dynamics, but I do know mine, and mine is tends to be more on the reserved side, just in general, for a lot of reasons why I'm like that. I grew up with four sisters, my mother, and so forth. My faith, my spiritual background teaches me to be kind to others, respectful, like considerate, love you like my neighbor, right? So that's how I move in life, or I try to move, right? I'm imperfect, so there's times I get frustrated and angry, but for the most part, that's my default.
Did the producers talk to you and try to make you more dramatic for reality TV purposes?
Nah, I don't think so. I think the producers were pretty chill. Like, they were all down to earth folks too. But nothing, I never felt like, I don't know, like pressured or pulled in any direction. I was just being myself.
The host of the show, Nick Lachey, called you and Christine nauseatingly perfect. Do you take that as a compliment? He did in the what do you call it? The whenever you all get together at the end.
Oh, the reunion.
The reunion. Yes. I couldn't think of the word reunion. In the reunion, he called you nauseatingly perfect. Yeah. Do you take that as a compliment?
Funny. I'll take it as a compliment, but I got to add a caveat that I am not perfect. Like if you ask me, I feel like I'm like a regular guy, like a regular person. And I do have like my imperfections. Again, like I get impatient and the whole nine. But I'll take it as a compliment though.
Compared to a lot of other reality TV couples, maybe you are on the perfect end.
I'll receive that.
All right. There is one scene where you and Christine talk, and the scene went viral. You and Christine talk about what it'll be like someday to raise biracial children. And it was probably one of the most healthy, grounded conversations I have ever seen in reality TV, the way you two talked. I mean, did the producers stick you in a park and just tell you to talk about that?
No, they didn't. So we had a date, a walk in the park where we got to kind of see the different, I don't know, the artistry, because like the bushes were cut a certain way, and we could talk about just life moving forward. What does it look like for us to be in Columbus and like future forward vision? And it looks like they took the clip where in our discussion, it was a much larger discussion where we spoke about children, if, you know, that were a path we went down, what it would look like. And I think it goes back, like without, regardless of the level of kindness or whatever we pour into our child, you know, if that happens, is they still have to enter this world. And this world is going to be full of experiences that are not like what the home is. So I think it's important for us to be able to have conversations about how we may or may not be able to show up for our children potentially in the future, forward looking, when they have to encounter the world, right? And the world has things where there are people who are just really like angry or in pain, and that comes out on you, or racist, or whatever the aspect is. So it's like, all right, we need to talk about that.
You really brought, I mean, you really grounded a part of Love is Blind. You're different than a lot of other reality TV contestants. Do you, I mean, you also didn't get as much airtime as some of the other contestants, and that's probably because you can have this nice, healthy, adult grounded conversation instead of being dramatic. Did you care that you, whenever you watched it, were you like, oh, that's okay?
Yeah, I was like, it's cool. It's cool. The screen time, I wasn't really there for the screen time. So
yeah.
If it was too little, like, that's totally fine. Plus,
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've done a lot of interviews about the show, but once all the publicity wears off, what's next for you and Christine? Do you guys want to be influencers? Do you want to keep up with the publicity?
So I think next, one of the big things is, one, enjoying kind of our newlywed life. Our anniversary is coming up on April 9th. So just being able to celebrate the past year together and like our vision forward for this upcoming year is one priority. The second priority is definitely our careers, right? Mm-hmm. So she's a medical SLP, and she really cares about her patients, and there's so much value.
Speech language pathologist. I'm sorry, I gotta say what the letters mean. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she helps people like regain their voice, essentially, like, and who are sometimes very like critical care, dementia patients, all the whole nine, which is super, super cool to see and hear about when she comes home. And then my career, I'm very passionate about it too. I'm public policy and kind of bringing up the next decision makers and leaders of tomorrow to, you know, push the world forward. I'm very passionate about that too. So that's second. And then third, I would say, yeah, maybe we'll share more with the digital community in terms of what we're learning. I don't think it's a mistake we landed on people's TVs or we've had the outpouring of love and support we've received so far. And we want to pour back and give back. And maybe that might be through some more experiences that we share together.
Do you plan on continuing teaching at Ohio State?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what's your research focus? Because right, you have your PhD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your research focus?
So my umbrella area is criminal justice policy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the work I'm doing right now is in the correction space, and I'm focusing on fatalities and just the health and well-being of people who are in correctional care. So we're talking about suicide, it could be homicide, it can be drug addiction issues, things like that happening within our jails and our prisons, because that spills back into the community. This is a cyclical effect. So right now, myself and some colleagues like Dr. Tasha Perdue and Crystal Tassone, we're doing some work to figure out the best interventions that can be done to just support the health and well-being of folks in our community, right?
All right. Well, we're public radio, so I'm sure you haven't been asked that question before whenever people want to interview about Love is Blind.
Right.
But since we are public radio, I'll invite you back to talk about your research whenever you have when you have something published, and we don't have to talk about reality TV then, maybe.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. We've been talking with Victor St. John from Love is Blind Season 10. He's from right here in Columbus. He's an Ohio State professor. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk about the ups and downs of reality TV. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Of all adults that watch TV, about 80% watch reality TV shows. From Survivor to Love Island to The Bachelor, the drama-filled shows are consistently topping the charts. Ohio just had its moment with the newest Love is Blind season, which was filmed here in Columbus. We're exploring the rise of reality TV and the cultural effects of these shows. Joining us now is Kim Akass, a professor of television studies and an independent scholar. She's the co-editor of Reading Television Series and has published widely on American television, feminism, and motherhood. Welcome to All Sides, Kim.
Hi, Amy. Nice. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you.
And also joining us is Bobby Miller, pop culture critic, writer, and host of Culture Kitsch, which is on YouTube. Welcome to All Sides, Bobby.
Hi. So thank you for having me.
So I guess I wanted, before we get into reality TV, I wanted to talk because you both were just listening in with me talking with Victor St. John from Love is Blind. And I think you probably got the vibe that I got, that he's pretty non-dramatic, I would say, maybe boring compared to a lot of other reality TV contestants. I mean, Bobby, what do you make of the idea of having kind of like a down-to-earth kind of guy be on reality TV like that and not be all dramatic and causing issues on the show?
I mean, I think it's very rare nowadays, mm-hmm. but it's honestly like an archetype of person that appears on reality TV that we've seen since the beginning of the kind of like sector of television. There's always like one person who sometimes can serve as the audience proxy who feels like they're the only one who is sane in whatever social experiment the show calls for. So it's a very refreshing thing to see, especially with how out there some contestants can get on any given show, but it's also something that I think does have like precedent.
Yeah. Kim, what do you think? I feel like it's been the editing of Love is Blind with him on definitely was true to him. I think that he wasn't in the show that much because that he and his wife were not dramatic and they actually fell in love. And what do you make of that actually happening on reality TV?
Well, that was a really interesting question. I noticed that he wasn't in Mexico. Mm-hmm. That was the really glaring thing, that him and Christine didn't seem to be in Mexico. I don't know if they went and they were just too boring to put on TV. Who knows? I think the thing is with reality TV, in the first season or second season, you'll see that people are much more themselves and much calmer because they really don't know what's happening. And I'm thinking back of the first season of Big Brother, for example, over here. And everyone was really shocked. And then as the seasons continue and people get more and more used to it, the contestants themselves know what the company wants and what the TV series wants. And so they start to act more. And so you get people like, I don't know, Jade Goody, for example, really played up to the cameras and it all ended up really badly for her. So I think it's really refreshing. I really, really enjoyed seeing him in the show, on the show, and that calm presence that just took you through the whole thing and thought, well, there really is a reason to be saying Love is Blind and can this work? And I think they proved that the experiment really can work and it doesn't need to be a big performance and a drama.
Bobby, there was a recent article in the New York Times that spoke about how a lot of these shows are actually getting canceled now. Do you think we're nearing the fall of reality TV? There was a rise. I mean, there was an increase in the shows, you know, in COVID and post-COVID when people were home and watching a lot of shows. Did we make too many of them? And now we need to, like, you know, reduce the number of reality TV shows?
I do think that definitely is where we're trending. And I think it's because of things like social media. You can go online and watch a, you know, 60 part series on TikTok that gives you the same like salacious dopamine hit that a good reality TV show can get, but without the hassle of TV that some people may experience. So I think the genre will just adapt and it may move as a more like social forward area of TV. It's the weird thing that happens with new media and traditional media where there's kind of a crossroads to be met. And I definitely think that they may be moving in the direction of like less shows, maybe more social forward initiatives within those shows. But we'll definitely see a transformation that'll happen, but it'll mean less shows for sure. Mm.
And Kim, most reality TV shows have some sort of competition aspect to them. Is there a difference between reality TV where people are looking for love, like Love is Blind and The Bachelor, versus reality TV competition shows that are like Survivor or The Amazing Race? Do you consider both reality TV?
I do actually, Amy. And again, another really good question, because there seems to be these gradations between when it's a game show. But actually, when you look at it, reality TV, the way it is, they're all game shows, you know, so whether there's a prize at the end or not, or whether it's marriage or whether it's, you know, to win the best cake or whatever it is, there's always an element of competition, and that's what keeps the audience really tuned into them. Because if you get hooked into it, and I say this having watched the whole of the final season of Love is Blind this weekend, you tend to really just get gripped. And I wasn't just doing it in preparation for the show either. I mean, I thought I'll watch one or two and then I'll go on to other ones. But actually, I mean, they're gripping. You know, the editing is so good. They end at like a real cliffhanger. And so there's always an element of competition. There's always something that will bring you back. And I just want to pick up on something that Bobby said, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there is this idea that many shows are now going onto YouTube, and but I think you've got to look at the ages of the audience. And certainly for the older viewer, you know, we don't tend to watch YouTube the way younger audiences do. So I think what we're going to find is there's going to be a split. You know, so you'll get the really established formats like MasterChef, like whatever you call it in America, the baking show, the Great British Bake Off. They will stay on the main channels, I think, because they are more for the older audience. And then the younger audience will go to YouTube for Love Island, Love is Blind, Naked Attraction, things like that. And you'll find that the audience starts to split. And, you know, that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, Bobby, do you agree with that? That there is a split in the audience of who's, because I there's a, there is a certain audience that will watch a reality something or other on TikTok, and then there's a whole group of people who will not.
Absolutely. I mean, like, reality TV has become like appointment television, kind of replacing maybe where the TGIF or, you know, like Must See TV lineup was. So it will remain in kind of that routine for a certain demographic of people. So absolutely agree.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about reality TV with Professor of Television Studies and independent scholar Kim Akass and Bobby Miller, pop culture critic, writer, and host of Culture Kitsch on YouTube. Bobby, what about shows like on HGTV and TLC, the channels, they have a less competition base to them. There's like Say Yes to the Dress, Property Brothers, My Strange Addiction. Those shows may be, I mean, they're still around. Maybe they're not talked about as much anymore. Why do you think that is? Do you think people are still watching those HGTV type shows?
I do think they are. It kind of just maybe comes out of like force of habit at a certain point. I feel just like I see those shows a lot on at like, you know, dentist office or th different things like that, like just places where they're mostly unoffensive, pretty like quiet shows. They don't require a lot of your attention. They can just exist. And also those shows like do so many episodes in one season. So like in syndication, they can kind of just be the background noise. And so I think that's like they're very much so a comfort for people. Like people will say like, oh, I love, you know, Love It or Listed, and that's my favorite show. And they've seen every episode, and it doesn't require much input from you. And I think especially when we're all kind of being asked a lot by the screens that we have, whether it be our phones, television screens, movie screens, programming like that is kind of essential because it's just like it asks nothing of you and gives everything of itself. And I think people really can enjoy that.
Yeah, Kim, what do you think of those shows that are more benign, less offensive, being a background kind of show?
I just think there's nothing wrong with a background kind of show. I love them. And I think that there is a difference between, I mean, in television studies, we talk about engaged viewing, where you're watching something like The Sopranos or, you know, something that really needs you to pay attention to the narrative. And then there's comfort viewing, which is when you think, I can't, and I'll just put on something like a show like that. And I notice, you know, when you're in the doctors or in the dentists or in hospitals, those shows are always on. And they're fascinating, you know, because it demands nothing of you. You can just watch a makeover show or, you know, we've got shows over here like Location, 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 Love It and List It and that kind of thing. And the home makeover shows, they're excellent. I love them. And I think there'll always be room for those. You know, I just think that there's all these different gradations of reality TV. You know, Real Housewives franchise, I can watch that back to back all day. It doesn't matter where it's set. It demands nothing of me. And, you know, that kind of goes back to the different styles of watching TV.
Yeah. Cam, what do you make of the trend that seems like there's more and more shows about love? Is that an accurate read, or is everyone trying to fall in love on TV now?
Oh, God, I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I go back to Blind Date. We used to have Blind Date on in Britain, a Saturday evening show with Cilla Black. You know, everybody loved her. And it was the same kind of format where you couldn't see whoever it was on the other side. And then, you know, what's going to happen when they get together. And then the show would follow that date. So it's got quite a long heritage on TV. I think it is harder. I mean, speaking to somebody who's been married for like 30 years, and what I hear from my daughter's friends, it's very hard to meet people nowadays. And, you know, what Vic was saying about the Tinder swiping, and I've got no experience of it, but I know people that have. So, you know, why not? I mean, I just think Love is Blind really does serve a purpose because it had them talking about what marriage means, what it's like to be together, you know, and that lovely, I saw that conversation about bringing up a biracial child. It's so important to have that kind of conversation because that's the kind of thing that you don't hear just in day-to-day life. So I don't know if there's more. I think they've always been there, but I think they do more nowadays. And certainly Love is Blind addresses lots of issues that people should be thinking about if they're thinking of marrying someone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bobby, what do you make of dating shows? Why do they keep us so entertained?
I mean, I think it is the gamified aspect of it where you have a whole host of people. You're trying to see like how everyone's going to mesh or clash with each mm-hmm. other. And I think it's the thing of like you may have a interesting dating life yourself. So getting to see someone else's play out over a course of weeks makes for like a really interesting story. But I think too, it's also a little bit like aspirational, right? Like mm-hmm. getting matched by producers or just like the fate that is television and seeing it work out can be really inspiring. And, you know, it can fill you with joy and make you feel like you're there. And I think that's what people really love about these shows. They either love the train wreck or they love when it works out and it's a fairy tale. And whether those relationships are actually all of one thing or another, it doesn't really matter because it's the story that people are watching unfold over weeks. And then maybe at the reunion, they may have the bubble burst. But when you're in the confines of the season, it's whatever story is being told via the editing or, you know, whatever it is. And it just, I don't know. I think people just, it may be a good proxy for their own lives. If they don't have very exciting dating lives, you can see it play out with, you know, a random stranger from Ohio.
Yeah. Kim, earlier you mentioned Real Housewives being just like TV candy that you can have on in the background, but there's like real conflict that happens. A lot of drama comes up in a show like that. Are there any negative consequences to a show like Real Housewives or The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives becoming so popular, you know, just for the average human psyche?
I mean, yeah, there's going to be damage for some people, you know, of course. And I mean, the Real Housewives franchise, it just feels like, you know, they've ply them with alcohol and then just, you know, set them off to have these huge rows. I just want to go back though to Love is Blind again, just to pick up something Bobby was saying. I'm so emotionally engaged in the show. I actually did cry at a couple of points. It really made me, it was very emotional. And then the other thing I found myself doing was like shouting at the TV, don't marry him. And then feeling like when they didn't marry him, I was like, oh, what a relief. It was about, so it's really emotionally engaging. But I think the Real Housewives franchise, for example, isn't. I don't find myself emotionally engaged in that. I just think it's like, it is a train wreck. You're just waiting for the next argument to happen or who's going to fall out with who. So, you know, these are, as I say, it's different gradations. They're both reality, but, you know, we know it's all scripted in a way anyway. It's all told in the editing. It's not actually reality TV, is it? And it's just, you know, whether it's sweet and nice, which I think Love is Blind is, despite the reunion when everybody turns on each other. And the Real Housewives franchise, they're very different animals.
Bobby, what do you think of
the manufactured editing and production, the manufactured drama versus, you know, real life storytelling. Because I think we saw both in Love is Blind as an example. I think we saw some of it was maybe a little manufactured, or the way it was edited to make it even more dramatic than it was. But others, some of it happened as it happened.
Yeah, I mean, like, to go back to something we talked about earlier, like, these shows run on maybe a little bit of manufactured storytelling and alcohol, and then you just kind of see what happens from that. It does make reality TV function in this really interesting space, to where it's like, on one hand, it is like real and it's just depicting things. You just set up a camera and let people go. But there are also is this like narrative bent where you have the producers pinpointing, okay, this person will be down for this. This person wouldn't be down for that. Let's put them in this situation. And so they are in turn like creating a narrative, you know, it might not have a script, but it does function in a similar way. And so it kind of transitions the whole show into like a different area, and it makes it really interesting. And I think some viewers do feel betrayed by it when like, I think a show like Real Housewives has gotten very inside baseball, where the producers on the show have talked about, yeah, we knew that we could put you two in this situation and this thing would happen. And I think some people feel like they might have wasted time watching it, but there still is a story being told. It may not be all the intimate details of that person's life or the situation that is, you know, being talked about, but there is a story and you were entertained. So like, there's a real, I think, toss up that tends to happen with those things.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Have you become swept up in reality TV? Has reality TV changed the way you consume media? You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to talk about some of the cultural effects of reality TV. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ohio just had its reality TV moment. The newest season of Love is Blind featured contestants from Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. The show wrapped up recently, with one of the finalists being an Ohio State professor who left the show with a wife. And he was known on the show for being stable, grounded, and not dramatic at all. Reality TV has become increasingly popular. The real people, relationships, and social dynamics matched with dramatic editing to keep us on the edge of our seats. And with the age of social media, the show doesn't end with the finale. The participants leave the show as influencers, with millions of followers continuing to share their story. Still with us to talk about reality TV and its cultural impacts is Kim Akas, a professor of television studies and an independent scholar. She's also the co-editor of the Reading Television series and has published widely on American television, feminism, and motherhood. Thanks for being here, Kim.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And also with us is Bobby Miller, pop culture critic, writer, and host of the Culture Kitsch on YouTube. Thanks for being here, Bobby.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, if you want to join us and tell us about reality TV shows, do you still keep up with reality TV show participants, or how has reality TV impacted you? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So reality TV has been around for decades, but it feels more dominant now than ever. And I think social media is a part of that reason, because as people have a stronger social media presence, there's also more controversies. In the last Love Island season, we actually saw someone get kicked off of the show for racism found in their old social media posts. And several other claims have been made about other contestants. Kim, what do you make of, you know, people whenever they go on reality TV and then the public kind of like digs into their past and finds stuff about them?
I've been talking a lot about this at the weekend, kind of preparing for this show. I think it's really sad, but I think it's inevitable. you know, if you go on TV, you know that people are going to be digging any dirt they can, which is one of the reasons that I think Vic was so brave to do it, because, you know, it is, you're putting yourself out there. I don't think it's fair. And I think, you know, I'm sure everybody has said things in the past that you would not agree with now. You know, things I thought when I was 16, I certainly don't think now. Luckily, we didn't have social media in our day. I think it's some, you know, it's something that I try to tell both my children. Don't put things on Facebook, it back in the day, or Instagram, that you don't want anybody to see, because, you know, if you're going for a job, people will dig it up, and, you know, people will use it against you. So I think, you know, when you go onto reality TV, it's going to be inevitable that social media kind of breeds this nastiness, if you like. I mean, I don't like social media at all, but then I'm an old person and I don't need to engage with it like I used to. But I think it's inevitable. And, you know, I'm just thinking of The Bachelorette, the whole fuss about that. That was, you know, it's just inevitable, isn't it? It's going to get out. People are going to see it. And then, you know, a whole season of a show has been cancelled because of this behavior. Whereas 30 years ago, it wouldn't have been out there because nobody would have filmed it. But I think it's inevitable nowadays.
Well, Bobby, let's talk about that. So ABC just canceled the upcoming 22nd season of The Bachelorette due to leaked video. The video was from 2023, showing the star, Taylor Frankie Paul, from The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, attacking her boyfriend. Do you think ABC handled this correctly, or were you shocked that they filmed the whole thing and then canceled it?
I am. I think with ABC being a Disney subsidiary and how Disney is very careful and calculated with any of their programming, but especially anything tied to the brand, it feels a bit off. I think that this was something that maybe they didn't see coming down the pipeline, but also too, I think the choice of casting someone outside of Bachelor Nation was also a bit of a departure for them as well. I know that the community of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette is a very insular space. And so bringing in someone else from another kind of sector of the reality TV world was already a big risk. And it is very interesting how everything played out. And now they have to cancel a whole season, which, again, like I said, like reality TV, especially on ABC, is like appointment viewing. And so now there's this really big gap in their programming, and they have to contend with that. And I think that that's something that's a position we don't often see Disney in, which is very fascinating.
Well, and Kim, we knew Taylor Frankie Paul and her boyfriend Dakota Mortensen were problematic before ABC even selected her to be the Bachelorette. So they kind of set themselves up for this, wouldn't you say? ABC, you know, I don't know if they made an error, but they set themselves up for, they wanted, I guess they wanted a dramatic season, and then they got it and had to cancel it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really unfortunate that there's been so much about, you know, 60 Minutes being cancelled, people losing their jobs because of what they've said in America. You know, the current political climate is so nervy at the moment. And I think that's kind of fed into ABC and the Disney company's decision to do that. And I think you're absolutely right, Amy. I think they were thinking, oh, let's bring some drama in, let's get, you know, people watching the series. And then when the video was leaked, they're in a really difficult position because they are facing, well, they could be sued, they could be cancelled. You know, it's happened before in American TV. It's kind of, you know, very conservative compared to our TV, compared to British TV. And I think that it actually proves how jumpy the media landscape is at the moment. You know, it wouldn't have happened maybe 2 years ago, but it is happening now. And I think it is just about the political climate at the moment. People are worried about being fined, you know, losing franchises, that kind of thing. And so I think it's kind of inevitable, but very, very sad.
Bobby, what earlier Kim was talking about how she's not a huge fan of social media, but social media has basically become the fourth wall of a lot of these reality TV series, where people feel like they know these people. The reality TV contestants, they keep following them on social media after they're done with the show. They watch every story they post. The people continue to be famous, but then the audience continues to be to think they're involved in their lives. What do you make of that extra layer on this reality TV moment, the social media part of it?
I think it keeps your audience like locked in. Like, I think it's helpful for a show, especially like Love Island, where you can have the series unfold and really be kind of moved through the culture via social media. So people, you know, publishing think pieces and about different contestants or the different relationships, or, you know, like people who have worked on prior seasons coming forward and being like, oh, I've got some like insider knowledge on what's happening. And then when the season ends and you have your person who you're like, I want to support, I think it does come from a good place. I think people's hearts maybe are in the right place where they want to support this person who they feel was plucked from obscurity and put on this high pedestal of being on television, and they want to support their career. And so they follow their every move and make sure that they're vetted and tested. I think once you win a reality TV show, you're almost like, now you're tested on, can you survive in the rest of traditional media? And I think the audience does have an awareness of that. And so they want to make sure that they have the backing and the support that they need. So I think of someone like Alandria from last season's Love Island, where she's everywhere. And I think it's because she has such a powerful fan base underneath her. And so she kind of comes in with a built-in audience, which I think really runs, especially Hollywood now, that you are vetted by a large swath of people. Not necessarily what you can bring to any given programming or red carpet, but it's like people want to know where you are. And so that means we want you to be at our, you know, event. And that provides kind of like built-in viewership.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about reality TV with Kim Akos, professor of television studies and an independent scholar, and Bobby Miller, pop culture critic and host of the Culture Kitsch on YouTube. And reality TV shows have always had a way, like they make people famous, as you were just saying with that example from Love Island. But a strong example is Keeping Up with the Kardashians. The Kardashians, it started as a reality TV show, but now they're fashion icons, A-list celebrities. Do you think that were they the pioneers of this pipeline of being a reality TV contestant and then becoming actually famous?
Oh, God, that is such a good question, Amy, because I'm just thinking, who won the best Oscar female actress this year? Jessie Buckley, right? She started on a reality TV series over here. I think it was Oliver or one of the musicals. And so she, I don't know if she even won it, but she was on it and she certainly got an audience. Now, it's not social media, but, you know, she's moved all the way through. She's proved herself. Actually, no, she didn't when she came second, which is really interesting when you look at reality TV, because it's often the second people that get the longer contracts and more successful. So I think, you know, there is a point people do use reality TV to get out there, to make contacts, to get networks. But as I said, with Jessie Buckley, she's now an Oscar winning actress. And so, you know, it's like the rest, as they say, is history. There are really good stories out there. It doesn't just lead to being an influencer. It can lead to a really successful acting career. So,
yeah.
Rest my case for reality TV.
Bobby, what do you make of the reality competition shows that are kind of mind games? I'm thinking of the new Beast Games on Amazon Prime, where he makes them make really difficult decisions and do some bad things to their quote unquote friends in order to earn money. What do you think of are there any ethical concerns there about the future of our psyche when it comes to these competition shows with mind games?
Absolutely. I think Mr. Beast is kind of taking the model from his YouTube channel and then putting it onto a television show. But it also is just an example of the things that we've seen in reality TV for decades now, which is that they can be kind of putting a magnifying glass to the whatever societal woe is very prominent at the time. And so obviously a lot of people are in pretty financial, like dire financial straits right now. And a show built on this kind of like, it feels like adult child with a ton of money kind of dangling it in people's faces, it feels like the aspect of reality TV that can be really exploitative. You know, like you have the shows that are meant to be aspirational, you know, maybe they're a little scandalous every once in a while, but there is maybe like a good natured spirit to it. But then there are also the shows that are meant to be kind of wholly exploitative. And I think that those shows where you're putting people who are, you know, clearly like they want money, and we're in a capitalist society, so everyone wants to do anything that they can to walk away maybe in a better financial situation. But it all, I think it just is a good mirror in the way that horror movies can be a mirror to like any of our societal, you know, pressures or fears. I think these types of reality TV shows maybe are a mirror to the worst parts of ourselves.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I was going to say that, you know, Mr. Beast may have, Survivor invented the mind games when it comes to money, but Mr. Beast may have taken it to a whole new level, but we'll leave it there. We've been talking about the ups and downs of reality TV with Kim Akas, a professor of television studies and an independent scholar. Thanks for joining us today, Kim.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Bobby Miller, a pop culture critic, writer, and host of Culture Kitsch on YouTube. Thanks for joining us, Bobby.
Thank you so much. This was amazing.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.